Welcome to the Food for Your Soul podcast, where we apply the Word of God to the hearts of men and women to stoke the fires of your delight in Christ.
This season, D. Richard Ferguson reads his Amazon best-selling novel, Escape from Paradise, A Layered Parable of the Christian Life. Stick around at the end to hear the author unfold the biblical basis for today's chapter and how it applies to daily life.
Chapter 13. As they entered the valley, Kalin, Watson, and Abigail slowed, then stopped, scanning the landscape. "The grasslands are dangerous," Watson whispered to Adam. "Stay here. We will make sure the way is clear, then come back for you."
"I'll be here," Adam said.
When they were out of sight, Adam made his way back inside the tree line and took a position against a rock wall that protected him from behind and provided a good view of all angles of approach. Until he knew for sure who he could trust, he would not let his guard down. He wished he could see the other side of the valley, but it was too far. In fact, he couldn't make out much of the slope right in front of him. Even shrubs 30 yards away appeared blurry. He rubbed his eyes, but it didn't help. The miraculous close-up vision from the salve had so enthralled him that he hadn't noticed the damage to his distant vision. He squinted towards three figures approaching from below. "Are they back already?" "Yes, that must be them." He stepped out to meet them and was greeted by a child's voice.
"Excuse us, sir. Do you need help?"
Three smiling young boys stood before him.
"Are you going to the cottage?" said the tallest boy.
"I was, but we can help you," said the second boy. "Crossing the river can be tricky."
Adam tried not to stare at their extravagant clothes and gold jewelry.
"Do you have a boat?" Adam asked.
"There are public boathouses on both sides. Anyone can use the boats. But going by yourself isn't a good idea.
You have to make it across before you get to the gorge. Drop into the gorge, and you won't make it out. But we can get you across."
Adam studied the boys.
"You're wondering about the gold," said the first, holding his necklace. "It came from the cottage. Come with us, and we'll show you how to use the cottage to get more gold than you ever dreamed possible."
"I was told I had to leave the gold to go to the cottage."
"You were told wrong. The ruler, the one who built the cottage, is the wealthiest man in the high country, and he wants his people to be rich. That's what the cottage is for. It's the tool he uses to show his love and generosity."
"I've seen other children from the cottage. They didn't have gold."
"That's because they don't have faith. If they would believe the gold is theirs and claim it, they'd receive it."
"And that's how you got the gold you're wearing?"
"Ha! The gold we're wearing is nothing. We have barns filled with gold. Follow us."
The boys ran through the tall grass toward the bottom of the valley, but not directly west as the others had gone. Instead, they took a southwest line. Skeptical, Adam hesitated. This didn't sound right. But then again, what reason did he have to trust the others? The thought that he might recoup his losses and that he may not have to choose between the gold and the cottage appealed to him. He didn't need barnloads of gold, but if he had enough so he didn't have to worry about working, that would enable him to spend his time searching for a way home. Adam ran to catch up. After several minutes, he stopped and scanned the area. They were gone. He looked back toward the tree line. If he retraced his steps, he might find the spot where the others had left him, even with his nearsightedness. He might also run into whoever killed those people. He turned westward and headed downhill toward the river. An hour's walk brought Adam close enough to the river that he heard the faint sounds of the rushing water below. Out of the corner of his eye, he thought he saw movement. He turned. Only grass and stillness. Another movement to his right, then a sound behind him. Something was out there. In a flash, they sprang on him, snarling, growling wolves from every direction. He had always been a fast runner, but with adrenaline pumping, he lit out across the meadow faster than ever, flying through the tall grass, hurtling stones and ditches. A stand of trees appeared just ahead. If he could make that, he could climb out of their reach. The grass whipped against his arms as he sprinted.
Almost there.
Gasping for air and muscles burning, he assessed the closest tree. With a strong jump, he should be able to catch the lowest limb and pull himself to safety. He glanced back, and in that instant, he tripped on a rock and crashed face first on the hard ground. He rolled to his side, his world spinning. His jaw ached from the impact. When he pushed to his knees, they had surrounded him. They attacked, snapping and snarling. He struck the first one on its nose, but the next was already upon him. He went down, stabbing at the wolf's eyes. The wolf parried the effort with ease and countered with a stinging bite. Adam punched, dodged, scratched, and kicked. He grabbed a handful of hair and jerked a set of vicious teeth from his arm, but the pack closed in, mad with the scent of blood. Adam's strength, adrenaline, and much of his blood soon drained, as did his will to fight. He rolled to his stomach, covered his face and neck with bloody forearms, and balled up. Hopelessly outmatched, he gave up the struggle. Sharp teeth ripped into his calf, another on his foot. Then a powerful jaw crushed his shoulder. He wanted to scream from the pain, but his wind was gone. A deep growl inches from Adam's ear signaled the killing bite. The creature's fangs penetrated Adam's neck with such force Adam expected his spine to snap. Then, the jaws released. Adam remained still while snarls, barks, and yelps increased, then faded into the distance. He raised his head but saw only what looked like a child chasing other children into the tall grass. The intense pain of his injuries, fear that they might return, and the realization of how close he'd come to death paralyzed him. Had he encountered the powers that had attacked Kalen? Or were they just wolves? Had those boys lured him into a trap? And who chased them off? Adam saw movement again, this time just below his position. A fresh surge of adrenaline made him alert, but not even adrenaline could enable him to run with his injuries. He summoned the dregs of his remaining strength and pulled himself along the ground through the tall grass toward a small clump of trees where he could hide. The sounds grew louder, footsteps coming up the hill through the dry grass. Adam stopped. There was no use. He wouldn't make it to the trees. He lay still, holding his breath. Maybe they won't see me.
Adam, are you okay?
He breathed a sigh of relief at Kalen's voice.
You're bleeding,
Abigail said, rushing to his side. She steadied him with one hand and then with the other gently touched his leg just below a severe laceration. Her already fair skin paled even further as she discovered his many other wounds. Her voice cracked, then faltered.
Oh, my.
We need to get him out of here, Kalen said.
Yes, Adam groaned. Please, anywhere but this place.
Watson frowned. I have seen wolf bites like this before. Men have died of lesser wounds. You will never make the journey in this condition.
Let's at least move him to some cover, said Kalen. He's exposed in this field. If the powers see him out here.
Indeed, Watson said. We will carry you to those trees.
Watson put his hand under Adam's arms from behind, and the women each took a leg. They gingerly carried him to the stand of trees and leaned him against a rock. A wave of despair overtook Adam. He knew Watson was right. He couldn't even sit up on his own, much less make the journey to the cottage, or back up through the grasslands toward the forest.
I don't want to die here, Adam said.
What had been a curious interest in seeing the cottage now swelled to a driving need to go there. As he felt death encroaching, every other priority faded to gray. He spoke through a stream of tears.
I need to see the cottage. Please, carry me, drag me, whatever it takes. I have to see it before I die.
I'm sorry, Watson said. Carrying you would do no good. If you can't walk on your own, you will have to stay here because progress toward the cottage is impossible when your heart is enslaved to something else. Wolf bites inject poisons that incapacitate desire for good and cause you to love the wrong things. In this case, gold. We could no sooner carry you to the cottage than force a camel through the eye of a needle. Adam could feel heavy golden shackles constricting his heart, squeezing tighter, anchoring him to the lowlands. "How do you treat injuries in the high country?" Adam asked. "If there's no gold, then..."
"Oh, there's plenty of gold," Kalin said. "But we don't need our own gold. Once you get your new name, anyone's gold can heal you. And you don't even have to touch it. Just seeing them enjoy their own gold heals your wounds."
In the hills to the north, silent eyes watched from within the black timber. Hundreds of warriors, swords drawn, awaited Anzu's order. Anzu turned to Adramelech, the legion commander.
"Hold,"
Adramelech said.
"He wants to wait for the scouting report."
Anzu glanced down at Adramelech.
"How did a passive, scrawny little worm like him ever make commander?"
Anzu straightened.
"Yes, sir."
Anzu had initially welcomed his transfer to the Legion when he was told he'd serve as a lieutenant under the legendary strategist. Other commanders studied Adramelech's methods on the battlefield, and rumor had it he was in consideration for promotion to the rank of regional power. But so far, Anzu remained unimpressed.
"I'm supposed to learn battle tactics from him? Wars are not won with timidity."
An hour passed before the advance team returned. Adramelech had not moved, nor taken his eye off Adam, until the breathless scouts arrived with their report.
"The area is clear. We are free to engage."
Hand-picked by Anzu, a detachment of elite warriors waited like a frenzied pack of dogs straining at their leashes, eyes fixed on Anzu's upraised hand. At his signal, it would be a race for the honor of delivering the lethal blow to finish Adam. Anzu tightened his fist and watched for Adramelech's nod.
"Now?"
"What is it, Kalin?" Watson asked. Kalin studied the grasslands.
"I don't like this."
Watson shifted his eyes to the north.
"They're probably close. We need to stay alert."
"Who's probably close?" Adam asked. "The great, little ones?"
"No. Our battle is not against flesh and blood. Remember when I told you about the powers that control the little ones? Those powers command thousands of warriors. They are the enemy. They are invisible except when exposed by the colors of the cottage. But sometimes it is possible to sense their presence.
Such as when you saw what appeared to be wild animals."
"You said they're exposed by the colors of the cottage. I saw those colors years ago when I was a child. And I saw them again when you fought the powers. What are they?"
"Those colors give substance to life," said Watson. "The gray of the lowlands is a sign of deadness.
The life of that entire world is draining away.
The cottage was designed and built by the author of all life, and those colors are glimmers of his life. His nature is pure goodness and virtue. In fact, it is the source of all goodness and virtue everywhere. It is the source of all beauty and all joy. Everything that is good emanates from his heart. He created the cottage as a way of transferring traces of his nature to us."
"So when I visit the cottage, I'll become better?"
"Not if you merely visit. Only if you pass through will you be transformed."
Adam shivered and closed his eyes.
"Stay awake," Abigail said with a gentle touch. "They prey on the weak.
Creases of anguish cut across her forehead as she regarded the lacerations that covered his body.
Why didn't you wait for us?
Some boys came. They said they could bring me to the cottage. I trusted them because they were children.
You should have checked their prints, said Watson. You would have seen wolf tracks.
Everyone's true nature is exposed by the trail they leave. Watson faced the direction they had chased the wolves, then back to Adam.
Even a person who is ostensibly childlike, if he turns your eyes to gold as your treasure, then be assured he is from the city, not from the cottage.
But they told me to trust the ruler. Isn't that the same thing you've been telling me?
Their lie was not one of words, but of definition. It is true that faith alone is required, but faith is believing what is promised, not believing what is desired. Your ability to believe has suffered two blows, one from the wolves, who make you trust in the wrong things, and another from the little ones, who infect your eyes with doubt. One prevents faith, and the other misdirects it.
You said the wolves injected poisons that make me love the wrong things? Is there a cure?
There is, but you must understand. The cure is excruciating.
I don't care how painful it is. Give it to me, please. I don't want to die.
You are already dead, Watson said. And if you truly die, only then can you live. The cure will destroy the part of you that is dead. Then you can have life that will heal your wounds.
Adam turned his head against the rock and closed his eyes.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I just want the cure. I don't care about the risk. Without it, I'll die anyway.
Watson met Abigail's eyes and nodded.
He is ready.
What is the meaning of the boys / wolves with all that gold? Well, that's revealed in the back of the novel in the section on chapter 13. The study guide has 17 questions for chapter 13. I'm going to read you number 11. You might remember this paragraph that says the warriors had suffered defeat in the last encounter with Kaelin, Abigail, and Watson, even though the humans had been caught off guard. Now that they were alert, it would be near impossible to defeat. The point of that is, if we obey the warnings of Scripture and stay alert like Jesus told us to, we'll be nearly impossible for Satan to defeat. For him to win, he needs to catch us off guard. So question number 11 is, what does staying alert look like for you? See Matthew 26:41, Revelation 2:2, and Ephesians 6:10, 11, and 18. Matthew 26:41 says this, "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." So there Jesus calls us to alertness with regard to temptation, understanding the weakness of our flesh, and watching out for the dangers. And then Ephesians 6:10, finally, "Be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes." And then verse 18, "And pray in the Spirit on all occasions and with all kinds of prayers and requests. With this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the saints." So there we need to be alert to the enemy, understand who's against us, be ready to defend against him, and especially to pray for ourselves and for all the saints. And Revelation 2:2 says, "I know your deeds, your hard work and your perseverance. I know that you cannot tolerate wicked men, that you've tested those who claim to be apostles but are not and have found them to be false." So Jesus praises the church in Ephesus because they had enough alertness to be aware of which teachers were false teachers. So to answer the question, what does staying alert look like for you? Well, in my case, victory increases risk. The longer it's been since I've fallen to a particular temptation, the harder it is for me to take it seriously. And so I let my guard down. It seems like it's no longer a danger and my defenses come down. For me, staying alert means realizing that and never letting up my efforts to steer clear of temptation and
preferring God's presence to the rewards of sin. It also means continually reminding myself that I have a formidable enemy, one who has defeated the strongest of men before me, men much stronger than I, and who's working hard to destroy me. Another question is this. Clearly, we're far more vulnerable when we're not alert. What are some spiritual threats that you need to be alert to in your daily life? For me, laziness, self-pity, vengeful attitudes towards hostile people, impurity, and apathy. I think those are probably the ones that I most often let my guard down. I'm not alert to them, and when the temptations come, I fall. Give some thought to your own life. Where are you vulnerable, and at what points might the enemy attack you? Father, the world around me constantly lulls me to sleep. The cosmic dangers you warned us about again and again, they just don't seem nearly as threatening as physical dangers that I can see, even though those physical threats can't do any eternal damage. You called us to live in a constant state of watchfulness and prayer. Watch and pray so you'll not fall into temptation. I have a long way to go to learn how to live like that, but at the very least, I can be watchful and prayerful right now, in these moments here with you. Will you open my eyes, Lord, to see the dangers I'll face today? And when you do, help me believe. Help me believe your word when it tells me how dangerous those things really are, when they don't feel much like a threat to me at all. To you I call, O Lord, my rock. Do not turn a deaf ear to me. For if you remain silent, I'll be like those who have gone down to the pit. Hear my cry for mercy as I call to you for help, as I lift up my hands toward your most holy place. Don't drag me away with the wicked. Your commands are radiant, dear Lord, giving light to my eyes. Open my eyes, that I might see wonderful things in your law and disastrous things that oppose your law. Teach me to lift my eyes to the hills, to seek you as my only help, and to see the real dangers from which I need help. I was once in the darkness, but now I am light in you, Lord. Help me live as a child of light and bear the fruit of the light, all goodness, righteousness, and truth, and to find out what pleases you. Teach me to walk in the light and to live as wise, not as unwise, making the most of every opportunity in these evil days.
Thanks for listening. To get your copy of the study guide, just go to drichardferguson.com. This podcast and hundreds of other resources are free to everyone because of the generosity of those of you who support this ministry. If you would like to help with a tax-deductible gift, our Venmo is @foodforyoursoul. Be careful, it's not food for the soul, it's food for your soul.
Until next time, may the Lord make his face shine upon you and give you peace.